Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
So we're back.
Good. So listen, you spoke earlier about the opioid system, yeah?
Endocannabinoid.
Same. Opioid system. Sorry.
Interestingly, while we're on that topic, we'll just say, you've probably heard people say that cannabis is a non-lethal substance, that you can't overdose on THC. You've heard people say that.
Yeah.
This is actually true, and the reason for that is we have in our brain both opiate receptors, which you just talked about, which your opioids bind to, your morphine, your oxycodone. We also have the CB1 receptor.
Right.
That's the receptor that THC binds to.
Right. And they're cellular receptors, just so people know.
They are.
And they're a system within the system of your cells.
Yes.
Right.
So at the back of your brain, you have what's called your brain stem. It's where your spinal cord attaches to the rest of your brain. And you have an area there which is called the medulla oblongata. And within that, you have something called cardiorespiratory centers. So you have heart centers and lung centers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what keeps you alive, okay?
Right.
Within that center, we know that you have opiate receptors. So when someone takes too many opioids, say a heroin overdose, they die, don't they? They just go to sleep because it shuts down the system.
Mm-hmm.
The CB1 receptor is very sparsely populated in that area. So there's not many receptors, which explains no matter how much THC a person ingests, it's not going to stop the cardiac and respiratory center. So it's non-lethal.
Wow, that's crazy.
So that's the actual mechanism. I just thought I'd mention that while we talked about
it. It's funny. I think I was trying to tell a story years ago. I was in Sydney. I was staying on Oxford Street. And I walked out of my hotel. It was a Tuesday morning. It was about 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And there's a guy dead on the ground in front of me. Dead on the ground. There's an ambulance pulls up. There's people starting to get around. There's an ambulance pulls up. Two ambulance officers jump out. They look over, his mate goes, he's had a heroin overdose, he's dead.
Mm.
They come over and they jam this straight into him, right? And the guy
came
back to life, and he gets up and he's like, starts screaming at the ambos, "You fucking motherfuckers, you did it," because they had fucked up his heart.
Yeah.
It was, and so that's addiction, you know? Dude, you were just dead, he was fucking dead, he was blue. You know?
So they give something called naloxone, which is blocks the receptor. It's an antagonist. It reverses what's happened.
So that's what it gives.
It's not adrenaline. Like some people might be listening to that being they've restarted his heart with adrenaline,
right?
Which could also be the case, but it's something to reverse the opioids and the depression on the respiratory system.
Right.
That's why they spring back to life, and it's pretty unpleasant. They come out irritable, anxious, like shaking. It's like being jump starters.
He was shaping up to them and everything. Like I was like, how do you go from being dead to being on your feet fully, like all your muscles are, and you want to kill someone? It was crazy.
So you need to breathe somewhere between 12 and 20 breaths per minute, depending. When you take the opioids, as they start, like heroin, as they start to depress your respiration, your breathing, you see it go from 20 to 15 per minute, to 12 per minute, to 8 per minute, for 6 breaths.
Mm-hmm.
The more it keeps going down, eventually that person,
their brain lungs fail,
their heart then arrests, and they die.
Mm-hmm.
But in that zone where they're still breathing, but you get to them and you're like, wow, this person's close to having an arrest.
Mm-hmm.
That's how like he would have been. So mm-hmm. they give that stuff to reverse
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes.
Okay. So just quickly, so then did you answer the question, the system?
We're going to talk about we asked about
I said the opioid system, and then we said the cannabinoid system.
Yeah.
And the question there was with the why haven't they taught about that system?
I'm not sure I know, to be honest. It wasn't in textbooks. I'd never heard of it. You'd think you would have a bit of an idea.
Mm. Conspiracy theorists are fucking having a field day right now.
I don't know. And, you know, even before there's a cannabis doctor who's about almost 70, a friend of mine, and it wasn't taught when she was going through.
Right.
And it wasn't taught to us. I would have to refresh when they sort of started to understand the endocannabinoid system. I know they started to... The receptors,
mm-hmm.
CB1 and CB2 receptors, were kind of isolated in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So at least in the 90s, they knew about it. I would say in the 80s, they knew about it. THC and CBD were kind of isolated in the 40s initially, and then maybe in the 60s they did more research on it. So it's been around for a while.
Yeah.
And the endocannabinoids is probably from the 80s, if I had to guess. Mm. So I don't know. But it wasn't, you know, I went through.
But it's safe to say, we're talking Western civilization, and it's, you know, it's medical growth, but it's been around for millennia.
Right, and I guess you could even speculate and say, well, even if we didn't know what the system was called, we have known, you don't get taught about plant medicines at all, and I don't mean that in the hallucinogenic psychedelic way, but you don't get taught about plants at all in Western medicine. Mm-hmm. And I think the history of that goes back to the late 1800s, early 1900s, when, and there's good and bad to this, but there wasn't a standardized system of education for medical practitioners, and this is in the US. And there's something called the Flexner Report, and this guy that was commissioned to go round and actually try and, the idea was to standardize it. So you had witch doctors, people that had, you know, put up a sign and said, come and see me and take my tinctures and my snake oil, and people that had actually studied. So they wanted to have a systematized standard so that when you saw a medical practitioner, you knew you were getting the same thing. And at that time, there was huge naturopathy scene and, you know, what would now be called alternative and complementary medicines, people using Rife machines and electromagnetic frequencies and heaps and heaps of different modalities for healing. Once it got taken to the level of the university institution, all of that stuff got condemned and scrapped. They basically said, this is what we teach within Western medicine, and that's when the pharmaceutical industry, when crude oil was becoming massive, ExxonMobil and all those big companies, and that's when they figured out they could make pharmaceuticals. This is my understanding of what I've learned about, that single molecule started to become popular. So instead of taking a plant like cannabis and saying it's got 120 different things in it which are working on lots of different systems in the body, they started to isolate things. So they would take a plant, chop out one molecule, get that, put it into a tablet in a lab, and then sell that, patent it.
Right.
Without going too far into it, I suspect, again, similar forces to kind of, and there's some benefits to that as well. Like, we've had, you know, amazing medicines, and we've now got people can be confident in some respects that when they see a medical practitioner, they've been to a certain level of training.
Yeah.
But I think what's really been expendable, or what's kind of the cost of that really, was to trivialize and condemn natural medicines and to move us in a synthetic, single molecule, highly regulated fashion rather than letting people be aware that there's a lot of other things that people can try. Like, plants are powerful. You know, you can see my shirt.
Powered by plants. Nice. What I was going to say, so do you, how does it work? Do you work in, I mean, I've been to LA, Venice Beach, where there's medical marijuana doctors on every corner. And you can go in there and, you know, tell them your little ailment and get prescribed something. How are you doing it? Like, are you in a clinic? Is it a dedicated clinic, or are you just in a normal? Because I know you were in doing the GP stuff before, but I think that's not what you're doing now, right?
Yeah. So I guess you can see a GP, and if they are educated around cannabis and interested and willing to, they can prescribe medicinal cannabis. They need to do a little bit of stuff with the regulatory bodies to make sure that they're trained. It's not much. And then you can see people like myself who work at private medicinal cannabis companies.
Right.
So we're based out of Perth, and people will come in. They can either do telehealth consults, or they can come in. We like to have the face-to-face space so people can actually come in. Mm-hmm. I think cannabis has enough stigma and dodginess around it.
Yeah.
If people can come into an office, see that we're actually real people, and you can chat to a doctor face-to-face, we can look at what medical ailments they have, make a sort of treatment plan that they're happy with, that they're, you know, very much involved in and are aware of how to manage it themselves, and then basically scripting the medicine to them. So there are a range of pharmacies now in Australia and in Perth as well that can get access to medicinal cannabis products. They come, like we said, as oils, capsules, the actual bud or the flower, the dried flower from the cannabis plant. They come in tubs. We are highly encouraging tubs. Little containers.
Plastic
containers.
Right.
And
not in a foil as they used to. No, you can't get it right.
So we're not quite where things are in the US. Yeah. You know, things are very different there. It's a vastly different.
Well, we're normally about 5 years behind here. Mm. And when you think about it, we're normally about 5 years behind on you know, the US and really, really, especially California. I mean, California was fucking crazy. Venice Beach was like, holy shit. You know, but there, you'd say, would there, you know, there'd be a doctor standing inside with a stethoscope around his neck going, hey, if you're sick, come see me. And he'd go in and sit down and go, okay, what's your ailment? You tell him what's going on. He'd go, so you got this and this and this. Okay, so here's your prescription. Take it down the road to this address. Take it down the road to that address. There's a little, you walk in the door, there's a little hatch opens up. There's a guy with a gun, 16, to shoot one in the hole standing there. And he lets you in, you walk in through the door, and there's an array of marijuana, and you just, there's your goods.
You should tell Dave about Josie, about Angus Mum.
Yeah, so when we were, Josie, Angus Mum was getting sicker and sicker, and she was, she had got to the point where she couldn't hold a cup of tea, so she was shaking. And like really viciously shaking. She, then they would give her a straw to try to hold a straw.
Was it Parkinson's or?
Well, there was certain things that there was something happening. It was obviously motor neurological that what was going on, and they just, I think they just didn't. The older sisters were finding out, okay, this is what it is, but they didn't want to tell her.
Sure.
Because she was old, and they didn't want to frighten her, you know. And she had numerous ailments that they hadn't told her about, because they believed, hey, you know, it's probably going to prolong her life. That's not for everybody, but it was in terms of her family. And so they would give her a straw, and then eventually she couldn't hold a straw, so she couldn't drink. She couldn't drink tea. So I said, hey, why don't we try this? So I had got some here in Australia, and it was friggin' expensive. For 50 mils, I think it cost me about $450, and I got it out of a dispensary in Fremantle. And we gave it to her, just one drop. Just one drop, and literally within 5 minutes, she was a sharpshooter. She literally, there was no shakes, there was nothing, and she was doing that twice a day, and twice a day she was fine. As soon as she felt it coming back, she'd do it again. And she was good. She came really, really good. I know she was medicated up to her earlobes prior to that, but that turned. And what it did was it gave her, in the last years of her life, a better experience of life, and a more richer experience of life. You know.
So something is working there, whether it's a placebo and her, you know, but she believes that whatever's in that's going to work, or the molecule itself is actually working. Something's working for her. You can't argue with the effect that person is seeing now. If you want to talk about movement disorders in the research, there's not enough research to say that cannabis is effective in movement disorders, Parkinson's, Tourette's, and, you know, other things. But at least anecdotally, that's an incredible story. How can you argue with that?
But she didn't know. I mean, the funny thing is, she had no fucking idea what we were doing. She had no idea.
So then it's probably not placebo.
Well, so it probably was placebo. But then the other thing that I've heard, we've had other clients come through. One particular client, the daughter was having, 10, 11 epileptic fits, up to 20 epileptic fits a day. A day. Now, can you imagine the sort of life that a kid, like, I don't know whether, my first experience of observing somebody have an epileptic fit was horrific. It was fucking horrific. I was like, and then as they came out, they were like childlike and docile, and they didn't know how to talk, and it was like, they started to get their speech back, and it was like, fuck, man, that is. Now, if you're doing, if you got an 8-year-old child and they're going through that daily, that's like, how do you operate like that? But through proper administration of the right oils, she came good, you know, reduced them down to literally one a week, two a week.
I think the epilepsy syndromes are really interesting, and there's good evidence that CBD particularly can be really helpful for people with epileptic syndromes. There's people that are using them alongside their conventional anti-epileptics, kids that are already on meds and then adding in CBD. One of the interesting stories around epilepsy or seizure disorders, there's something called Dravet syndrome, which is a rare syndrome where kids can have, and I guess I should say there are a few different kinds of seizures. There's tonic, clonic, grand mal, like that, where the person's lights out, game over, and then wakes up. And then there are people that are having partial seizures where they might have absent seizure, staring into space.
One of my cousins has that.
Little things, but less kind of dramatic. And in Dravet syndrome, kids can have 400 seizures a day, or, you know, huge numbers of seizures. It's a rare genetic thing. And there's been cases of one in particular, which is where there's a famous strain of, it's actually they were putting in an oil called Charlotte's Web, and this was the name of the product named after the little girl whose life had changed. And
right.
she was using CBD, and she went from hundreds and hundreds of seizures down to like one a week or something incredibly dramatic. So CBD epilepsy
wow.
and for some people in some epileptic syndromes has been absolutely life-changing.
So where can that be researched, like that sort of thing?
Trying to find more about it. Well, there's quite a bit of studies now around epileptic syndromes and CBD, so you can just plug it into Google and just have a look at some of the research, like PubMed and some of the journals, and actually look through it and see what kind of dosages people are using. Normally somewhere between 20 and 50 milligrams per kilogram for CBD in kids, but it just takes a bit of looking.
Yeah, cool. That's fantastic. That's really good.
Really cool.
Yeah. It's such a good topic of conversation, and I mean, we could spend hours here, couldn't we, just chatting away.
Yeah.
And do you use it yourself?
No.
Okay, because you've no need to.
And this is the thing where, like, maybe some of my hypocrisy comes into it. Like, I'm very much trying to manage as many things in my life as I can without.
Without having to have any other assistance.
Without bringing in external things.
Things,
after that scabby thing on my face, I've got this red rash looking thing around my eye. That's been there for a couple of months, and I'm trying to manage it without trying anything. Granted, I did try some CBD on that topically, and it seemed to sort of settle it down. CBD's been helpful for some skin conditions, psoriasis and eczema for some people.
Right.
Now, it seemed to make it worse for me, so I stopped it.
Oh, wow.
But my philosophy is to try and manage things with what I have without having to bring stuff in. Maybe I'm a little bit puritanical like that, but if I was in, you know, agonizing pain, you know, I would be going for the morphine if I had, you know, kidney stones, gallstones or something.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not against it.
Yeah.
I'm really not.
No.
But I'm about trying to...
See, I don't consider that hypocritical, because I think, like, you want to offer people what is going to work. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And at the end of the day, for some people, they want to do what you're doing and not take anything outside of themselves. Like, you know, if they're going to have a headache, have the headache. Do you know what I mean? Instead of having to take... And then for other people, they're in so much pain that maybe they have to go down this road or go down that road, and it's okay. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I don't think that it's hypocritical just because you're prescribing, you know, just because you're prescribing, I don't know, kidney medication doesn't mean you have to take the kidney medication. Do you know what I mean? So same for the medical marijuana. I don't think it makes, you know...
I think it falls into that duality as well. Trying to be able to integrate both.
Yeah.
Of everything, and I know that's what you guys teach, but also with health, like using West and East and not getting stuck in either side, not getting polarized, but bringing them together and being like, there's a time and a place for
everything.
And I really believe that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I maybe went on about that in the Mind Body Connection one that we did, but being able to choose when is the right time rather than just having a reflex, which is the hand flies out for a tablet every time.
Yeah.
And there's a certain benefit and experience that comes out of trying to understand what it's about.
Right.
Like, this thing came up when, interestingly enough, I started recording an online course and being in front of a camera and being nervous and all of this stuff that had been in my head about wanting to, you know, being scared to do it or being fearful. That's when this came up.
Mm.
And I was like, well, that's interesting timing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't got it swabbed. Maybe it's, you know, something else. But, yeah.
Have you had anybody look at it, or are you just self-diagnosing and seeing what it is yourself?
I'm just watching it. I would like... It's not life-threatening. It's not doing anything.
Yeah.
It's not affecting my vision or anything else. And I think with a certain level of knowledge, and I'm lucky to have the education that I have, but I would like people to be able to have more of a role in their health and look at something and be like, what is this doing?
Mm.
How severe is it? I'm not going to run and start putting antibiotics on this. It doesn't need it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to pick the right treatment and the right thing for the right time.
Yeah.
That's
really cool.
Yeah, cool.
Love it. Thanks so much, Dave.
Thanks
for your time.
In. We really appreciate it.
I know we'll
it.
Have a few more people messaging in. How can we chat to Dave? Can we let them know where you're at?
Yeah, you can find the clinic that I work for. I won't spruik it now, but you can find it online just by searching for my name or medicinal cannabis. We're one of the few medicinal cannabis clinics in Perth.
Yeah.
And if people want to come in for face-to-face, and even if they come in and just have a conversation and say, that's not for me.
Yeah.
That's fine. People walk in and say, look, I've heard what you said. That's not for me. I'm like, amen.
Yeah.
You considered something new.
Yeah.
It's not for you. Fine.
I love that.
It's giving people the freedom to choose what they think might be suitable for them.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
What
more
can you ask for?
Perfect. Good work.
Thanks so
much. Thanks, Dave-o.
Thank you, guys.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Even if you live the most extraordinary life, there is always more to learn. This is why tens of thousands of people are using MJB Seminars techniques to hack their consciousness and bridge the gap from where they are to where they actually want to be.
MJB Seminars use cutting-edge transformational processes that are science-based and backed to help people break through subconscious barriers and limiting beliefs in order to reset, reboot, and live inspired. If you'd like to know more today, Google search MJB Seminars Bridge the Gap. Click on the first link and watch the video.
Now, for simply watching the video, you will also receive a complimentary coaching session with one of our master coaches valued at over $600 to help you get traction in your life today. Remember, live life inspired.